would get your Bibles out and turn to Hebrews chapter 12. While you're turning there, let me introduce this chapter. This lesson is a follow-up on this morning's lesson, which was a follow-up on last Sunday morning's lesson, preparing the child for discipline. But tonight we're going to be talking about preparing yourself. The value of discipline has always been recognized by wise people. And it's pretty easy now to go to the internet and get some pretty neat quotes. And so I've done that. And just to share a few of them with you, it kind of gets us in a frame of mind to talk about and think about discipline. James Russell Lowell, American poet of the 1800s, said, "Where one person shapes their life by precept and example, there are thousands who have shaped it by impulse and circumstances." Michel de Montaigne, a French philosopher of the 16th century, said, "Make your educational laws strict and your criminal ones can be gentle. But if you leave youth its liberty, you will have to dig dungeons for ages." And Roy Smith, an American Methodist preacher, said, "Discipline is the refining fire by which talent becomes ability." And I like that one. He also said, by the way, "More people are troubled by what is plain in Scripture than by what is obscure." And I like that one too. And then one last one by Jim Rohn, American speaker and author. "We must all suffer from one of two pains, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. The difference is discipline weighs ounces while regret weighs tons." The Bible emphasizes the importance of discipline, and throughout these lessons, I've not gone to some verses that some of you expected me to, so I don't want to disappoint you. So I'm going to go there, and a preacher called me not too long ago and wanted to know if I knew of any book that was good on Proverbs, and a good commentary on Proverbs, or actually he was looking for an outline. And I told him, I said, "You know, the only thing that I've ever found that I really thought was worthwhile on Proverbs is found in this book right here, in this daily Bible, chronological Bible, by Elflegard Smith." And it has been broken down into topics, and obviously there are proverbs that would fit in more than one topic, so you had to put it in one or another or another. And so there were judgment calls about some of them, but listen to what the wise man had to say about discipline. "My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as a father the son he delights in." By the way, that is the quotation that we're going to see in Hebrews chapter 12. And then, "He who heeds discipline shows the way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. He who ignores discipline comes to poverty and shame, but whoever heeds correction is honored. He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. A fool spurns his father's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. Stern discipline awaits him who leaves the path. He who hates correction will die. A mocker resents correction. He will not consult the wise. He who ignores discipline despises himself, but whoever heeds correction gains understanding. Discipline your son, for in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. Blows and wounds cleanse away evil, and beatings purge the inmost being. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not turn from it. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he'll not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. Discipline your son, and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul. That's some of the Proverbs. In the New Testament, there's a passage in the New International Version, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. It says, "For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline." And the word that's used there, that's translated self-discipline in the New International, is a word that means to be of sound mind, to have your mind under your control, curbing one's desires and impulses, and it can be translated self-control. We noted this morning that biblical discipline is not simply punishing a child, even though that can often be involved in discipline and has to be occasionally. It has to do with teaching and enforcement. Discipline is more than punishment for doing something wrong. In fact, it is more about teaching and encouraging what is right. And only in against that backdrop does punishment accomplish what punishment is designed to accomplish. Like most things in life, discipline has a positive side and a negative side. If we emphasize the positive, then the negative will accomplish its desired goal. And I'd like to spend the rest of our time in what I consider to be some fun, to go to a passage of Scripture and examine it in its context. And I'd like for us to focus in this, in Hebrews chapter 12, on the value of discipline. And what we're doing by going to this context, the last couple of lessons we've been talking about discipline from the standpoint of a parent administering discipline to a child, well, we're going to flip the coin over and we're going to see how you can take discipline now. Because this is the standpoint from which this is written. The book of Hebrews, the letter of Hebrews, is written to people who are discouraged because they didn't expect that being a Christian was going to be this hard. And they were undergoing lots and lots of difficulty in some cases, as we'll find out in Peter. Depending on when you date the book of Hebrews, certainly within the area of the latter half of the first century, then things are really tightening up on Christians. And the book of Hebrews is written to encourage those Christians. They were questioning whether or not it was worth the price that they were having to pay. And we've all experienced that quite often the beginning of something, some venture, is more exciting than the day-to-day continuation of it. My phrase is, it's Monday morning, and Monday morning is hard. That's when the bills come due. That's when the excitement is over. And now we settle down to a day-to-day, work-a-day world. And there are some folks that can't stand Monday morning. We have to have Friday and Saturday all the time. Marriage is that way. And I'm not telling you anything new. If you've been married, it takes hard work to make a marriage work. The beginning of it is very exciting, but Monday morning, and I don't mean that in a bad way, I'm just saying every worthwhile effort requires a serious amount of effort. School is that way. A job is that way. Being a parent is that way. Buying a new house is that way. Monday morning rolls around, doesn't it? And it's exciting when we think about it and when it's coming out of the ground. And being a Christian is that way. Why is it that it's easier to motivate us for single events than it is for continuing events? Why is it easier to get people excited about a weekend, something or other, anything or other, or a one-time contribution as opposed to increasing your contribution for the rest of your life? Well, because one requires discipline and the other one doesn't. That's simply why. And lots of us don't have much discipline in our life. And when it comes time to discipline our life, then this is not fun. The beginning of something is fun and it's exciting, but to continue it and keep it going, and I have lots of friends, and you probably do too, who are idea people, and they like the ideas and they like to get things started, but then they like for somebody else to take it and continue it. And if it were left up to them, it'd fall flat on its face once it got started. But Christianity is a matter of continuing day after day. And it doesn't have to become drudgery. For some people it has, unfortunately, and you can see it in their lives and in their eyes. But everything in this life that's worthwhile requires discipline. I don't know of anything that doesn't that's worthwhile. Now, what is it that enables you to continue and endure when others become discouraged in life? The answer is, guess what? Discipline. Think about that. That's why some people can continue through difficult times when the road all of a sudden has serious difficulties on it. If you're not prepared for the road, then you get discouraged and quit. But a person who's going to make it to the end is going to have something that's going to cause him or her to continue through that, and that's going to be discipline. So the Lord knows that we need discipline in our lives, or we will become discouraged and quit. If we do not have discipline in our lives, then you're going to quit somewhere between now and the end, because you'll get discouraged. Discipline keeps you from becoming discouraged. That's worth your writing down somewhere. Discipline keeps you from becoming discouraged. And that's what this section is about. But the interesting thing is, and there's always a twist in things, isn't it? That if we don't learn the value and the proper purpose of discipline, and if we don't learn how to accept discipline in the proper way, then it will produce the very thing that it was designed to prevent: discouragement. Now, isn't that interesting? That God designed discipline to keep you from becoming discouraged. But if you don't handle it properly, like so many other things in life, then it actually does the very opposite of what it was intended to do. And so we need to learn not only how to discipline our children as parents, we need to learn how to be disciplined, because we are children also. We're God's children, aren't we? And we're going to learn from Hebrews chapter 12 that God loves us, and He's going to discipline us in this life. And just like we expect our children to take our discipline correctly, then God expects us to take His discipline correctly. And that's where we're going in Hebrews chapter 12. And so let's all learn how to view the difficulties in our life and how to handle them so that they will accomplish what the Lord intends for them to accomplish in our life. And so this lesson is viewing us as the recipients of discipline. Discipline from God rather than the administrators of discipline. And so here with this last lesson, we're going to flip this coin over. And it's been, you know, tongue in cheek, been kind of nice to talk about discipline somebody else. But now it's our turn. And how are we going to take it? And so in Hebrews chapter 12, let's pull out, and I've gone through this chapter over the years so many times, and I've outlined it in so many different ways, and every time, every outline has its own purpose and accomplishes its own thing. But for tonight, I want us to see three truths in this chapter, outline this chapter, that will prevent discouragement in your life. three truths that we need to keep in mind to keep you from being discouraged are, if you like to flip it over, if you don't like to talk about what keeps us from being discouraged, then you can say three truths which will assure us of victory. But since we're talking about discipline, then I'll lean on the, I guess, negative side to prevent discouragement. And the first truth is, others have successfully endured. Others have gone through what you have gone through and more, and they have overcome. Let's read, begin reading in chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race that's marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. There's your key. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the beginner and the ender of our faith. The pioneer, that's the originator, and the perfecter, that's the completer, the one who completes it. So he's the beginning and the end of our faith, who, when we set our eyes on Jesus, who is the example of the beginning and end of our faith, here's what we're going to see. Who, for the joy set before him, he had his eyes on something too, didn't he? The joy that set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful man, so that you will not grow weary and grow weak in your will. You catch it? Lose heart, the NIV says. Same thing as being discouraged. It is, consider him and what he went through and how he overcame, so that you will not grow tired and discouraged. So that's the first thing that we do. We have examples of others. First of all, in verse 1, we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and you go back to the prior chapter, and it's giving you who some of those witnesses are, those heroes of faith. And he said, and he's drawing an analogy as if we're in an arena and we are participating in a race. We're somewhere along the line of our race. I would say at the starting line, but most of us are beyond the starting line. We're somewhere, maybe some of us on the backside of the back lap here. But we're running our race. And he says all in the stadium around us are these witnesses who've gone before us. And every one of them has run the race successfully. Every one of them. And he gives a list of some of them. And then the ultimate one, and while we're hearing all of this crowd around us, who's cheering us on and encouraging us and telling us that we can finish the race, then he said, here's what you do with yourself. You're hearing all of this encouragement, but you set your eyes on Jesus. And where's he? He's at the finish line. And he's holding up the crown. And he said, set your eyes on him and don't ever take your eyes off of him. And when you think that you, when you think you can't take another breath and your lungs are burning, And there have been so many obstacles along the way, and people have done things to you during this race that they shouldn't have done, and things have happened unexpectedly to you, and you've stumbled, and maybe you've fallen, but you've gotten back up, and he said, just keep your eyes on Jesus. This is the way to keep from getting discouraged in life. Because if you take your eyes off and you start looking over here to the side, you start seeing all the problems that, that potentially could happen, are the things, and focusing on the things that have happened and are happening, rather than keeping your eyes focused on Jesus, then it's pretty sure that you're going to be overcome. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face. And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. And keep reminding yourself of three things. They made it. He made it. And in verse 4, he said, "You've in your struggle, against sin. And by the way, let me pronounce the anglicized Greek word here and you'll get the picture. Antagonizomai or antagonizomai. What word do we get from that? You see, it comes out, this antagonist or this agony, all same root word here. And you're agonizing against sin. It's not been easy to get where you are if you're a Christian. You've got some scars. There's been some blood, maybe. Well, actually, the next verse says you haven't resisted to the point of shedding blood, didn't you? So there are some who've had it worse than you have and that I have. And at the end of this lesson, we're going to flip over here and read just how some of those who've gone before us in that great cloud of witnesses did have it worse, far worse than we did. So, remind yourself, they made it, he made it, and there are others who've had it far worse than you've had it. And if you take that properly, then that'll help you keep from becoming discouraged. Secondly, verse 5 through 8, because God disciplines you, because you are his child and he loves you. Let's read it. And you have forgotten the word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. And then he goes back to the proverb that we read earlier. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline. Do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? And if you're not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Here's the second thing to remember, to keep yourself from becoming discouraged. God is disciplining you, and the hardships that you're encountering in your life, God is using those to discipline you. And it's not always punishment because of something you've done wrong. When we think of discipline, we automatically think, well, I've done something wrong, and so he's punishing me. We need to understand that discipline is much more than being punished for wrongdoing. There's the positive side of it. You're going to have to get tough. You're going to have to practice. You're going to have to get yourself in shape to run this race. It's not going to be an easy race. And if you just think that you can lay around on the couch all the time and get up and run the race, you're sadly mistaken. You've got to get out there and run that race. You've got to get yourself prepared. He said at the beginning, throw off everything that's in the way. The sin that entangles us and everything that hinders us. You've got to get all this, the extemporaneous stuff off so that you can run this long distance race, because you're going to be running till the day you die. It's a long term race. It's not a short sprint. It's every day. Every day we wake up and we take up our cross and we follow him and we deny ourselves. You're not going to make it without discipline. You can't run every day without discipline. You'll get tired and you'll want to sleep in and you'll want to quit and you'll become discouraged. There are some vital ingredients in life that can only be gained through disciplining your life and your thoughts. You have to get them under control. You can't have your thoughts over here in the world and run the race successfully. You've got to think on these things. Whatsoever things are goodly and good and lovely and of good report. These things. We have to focus our eyes on Jesus and control our mind. And so when difficulty comes into your life, it doesn't mean that God has abandoned you. In fact, this is just the opposite. It means that he loves you like a son. He's treating you as sons, verse 7. Now, these difficulties that come, and he said endure hardship as this one. There's some really difficult things. B-Jack prayed when he got up a few moments ago. It's been a hard week for some. He lost a brother, went to his brother's funeral. It's a hard week. There are lots of folks that are struggling with serious problems in our life, health problems and other problems. Some looking for a job. Hardships in life. How are you going to view these things? What are you going to let these things do to you? It doesn't mean that God has abandoned you. And he says here there's two ways, there's at least two ways that you can mishandle God's discipline. Number one, you can treat it lightly. That'd be a bad mistake, wouldn't it? Any of you, I don't know, probably girls can't relate to this. I don't know if you can or not, but lots of guys can. Most of the guys that I grew up with came to a point in their life where their mom or dad disciplined them for the last time. Sometimes it wasn't a really interesting, it wasn't an interesting experience. It wasn't a very pleasant one. I can remember the last time that my mom spanked me. I don't know how old I was, but I thought I was too old to get a whipping. And my mother didn't seem to agree with me, and so, she, you know, I don't know, I was probably 13 or 14 years old, and she was going to give me a whipping. And she'd given me several thousand, and so I should have been used to it by that time. And she always used a fly swatter. Now, this is not the same fly swatter that you go buy today, okay? This fly swatter had a wire handle, okay? That's the only kind that there used to be. They weren't plastic. And it had the screen on it, you remember, with the little rim around it. When the rim wore out, well, that hurt even a little more, you know, when that piece was hanging off. But she was going to give me a whipping. And I decided I wasn't going to cry. Any of you guys relate? Any of you been there? Yeah. I wasn't going to cry. It's too big. It didn't matter what she did. I wasn't going to cry. So she whipped me for a while, and I didn't cry. And she said, "Oh, you're not going to cry, huh?" And she turned it around. That made a difference. The wire end was a little different. She felt like, and I did, treated her discipline lightly. Now, I wasn't too bright, you know, I should have just screamed and cried and let it, you know, what made her happy. So, but he says, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline." That's a mistake. That's a really serious mistake. And then the second thing he says, and I guess this is, I've tried to think about this. Maybe this is the opposite of it. Maybe this is one extreme, treating it lightly, and then there's another extreme over here, and that is, do not lose heart when he rebukes you. And again, that word literally means to, let's see, I said it just a moment ago, to lose your will. To lose your will. If you don't take discipline in the right way, and when something really difficult happens to you in your life, there's a temptation just to get discouraged and quit and say, you know, I've tried to live as a Christian, I've tried to please the Lord, and I've tried to be good, and I've done this, and I've done this, and look what's happening to me. You know, the answer to the question, why is God doing this to me? You know what the answer is? Because you're His child and He loves you. That's why God's doing this to you. Can you take that? Can you take God's discipline? Can you submit to Him as your father? You see, I wasn't submitting to my mother on that occasion as my mother. You don't have a choice about whether or not you're going to be disciplined. The only choice that you have is God's discipline going to be wasted on me? Or will I allow His discipline to accomplish what He intends for it to accomplish? And by the way, your children make the same choice. You can impose discipline on them, but they're going to have to receive that discipline with the right spirit, for which hopefully it was intended, in order for it to accomplish what it's designed to accomplish. And then thirdly, The third thing that keeps us from becoming discouraged is the purpose and the result of discipline, verse 9 through 11. Moreover, we all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them, the New International says, but actually both it and the King James, neither one reflect the true word here. The word is introspect, and the word them is not in there. Read it with me. Our fathers disciplined us. No, I'm sorry. Moreover, we all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we introspected. That's what discipline is designed to do, to cause us to look inside ourselves and see what we need to change and to make that change. Isn't that the purpose of discipline? Isn't that what you want your child to do? That you want them to see the error of their way if you're inflicting punishment on them? And so he says, our fathers did that, and we introspected. And then he says, how much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? And so when God disciplines us and we take it the proper way, then we're submitting to him as our Father. And if we don't take it the proper way, then we're rebelling against it. And we're refusing to submit to him. Our fathers, he contrasts, our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good. Sometimes our father might make a mistake in disciplining us. He might overreact. He might over-discipline us. He might under-discipline us. He might discipline us for the wrong reason. He might discipline us unfairly, but God never does any of that. Our fathers disciplined us as for a little while as they thought best, he said. But God disciplines us for our good. That's an absolute. He doesn't make a mistake in discipline. That we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. And we can all say, amen. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. You got it? Remember what we're to do this morning from Ephesians 6, what we're to do for our children? Don't provoke them, but teach them and train them. You know what God's doing for you? He's teaching you and he's training you. How? With his discipline, positively and negatively. How are you taking it? Whenever difficulty comes into your life, what do you say? Do you take it lightly? Do you take it too hard and become discouraged? This, and he says, you know, the ultimate goal here is, he says that we may share in his holiness. If you don't accept God's discipline, then you cannot share in his holiness. This life that he wants to give us can only come through us accepting his discipline. When we submit to him in complete trust, and whenever we learn to submit to God, even in hardships, there are three things that come, verse 10 and 11. Verse 11 says, we learn to do what's right. And we gain peace that can only come by the security of knowing that we're his children. And if he doesn't discipline you, you're not his child. And then the third thing, verse 10, he clothes us in his magnificent holiness when we submit to our Father and his discipline. You can't make it without discipline. You're going to die without discipline. You're going to quit. You're going to get discouraged. In verse 12, he summarizes it by saying, therefore, and look at the graphic language, strengthen the hanging down arms and the enfeebled knees. What picture is that? Your arms are hanging down, your knees are weak, you're discouraged, aren't you? you're just about ready to quit running the race. It's just about got the best of you. Therefore, in view of what he's just said, strengthen those hanging down arms and those enfeebled knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame will not be literally turned aside, but rather healed. Continue to run the race that's set out before you with patience, just like he did. Now, I want to bring a couple more things just to wrap this up. Do you realize that these brothers and sisters that he referred to in the beginning of chapter 12, who comprise what he calls this great cloud of witnesses, do you realize what they faced? Look at let's pick up in verse 35 of chapter 11. This is when you think you've got it hard and when you're discouraged. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured, refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And he's writing this so that these brothers and sisters that he's writing this Hebrew epistle to will have someone to look at as an example. Now let's take it down one more notch. These brothers and sisters that he is addressing this epistle to have themselves undergone some pretty serious trials and difficulties. If you'll flip back with me to chapter 10 and begin reading in verse 32, he says, "Remember those earlier days after you had received the light, when you stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property, because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions." That's these folks that he's writing this epistle to. They've had some really tough times on their race. And he reminds them of them. Then he says, verse 35, "So don't throw away your confidence. You're going to receive what he promised if you don't get discouraged and quit." And so it was those saints that went.